For over a century, some moviegoers have been inspired to not only watch movies, but pick up a camera and tell their own original stories with moving images. A new online exhibit chronicles some of these cinema adventurers and Texas's rich history of non-professional movie making. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. The Texas Archive of the Moving Image has recently curated an online exhibition devoted to shedding light on the story of amateur filmmaking in Texas. The exhibition is titled Amateur Auteurs and was curated by Madeline Moya, the Texas Archive of the Moving Image's managing director. I'm delighted to have Madeline Moya back on the program today. Good morning.
Hi, Charles.
I should mention you're joining us by phone from Austin, where TAMI, the Texas Archive of the Moving Image, is located. Before we get into this particular exhibition, give us a little background on just who TAMI is and what its mission is.
All right. We were founded in 2002 by film archivist and University of Texas at Austin professor Caroline Frick. We're a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and we work to discover, preserve, provide access to, and educate the community about Texas's film heritage. Our online collection includes home movies, amateur films, advertisements, local television, and industrial productions, just to name a few. We partner with institutions and individuals across the state to digitize and provide web access to thousands of moving images that offer insight to Texas's history and culture. So films and videotapes are not made to last. Over 50% of Hollywood movies made before 1950 are now lost. And for Texas-produced materials, statistics are estimated at closer to 90%. Film and videotape are susceptible to humidity and heat, which are two staples of Texas's climate, as I'm sure you all know. So we're kind of in a race against time to rescue Texas films. So we go around the state collecting them just to do that, exactly.
I know a lot of listeners may be aware of you over the years coming here doing your Texas Film Roundup, where you literally will take in just about any format that people have, take it back down to Austin, digitize it, return their materials along with a digital copy, and then that becomes part of the archive. So it's a tremendous service, and I should mention it's all free.
It is a free digitization service, yeah. The exchange, we give you a, you know, your free copy, and in exchange we get to keep a free digital copy, but we do great things with it. We have this online collection where people can, you know, access these pieces of history, and we create lesson plans that are free for K-12 teachers to use in the classroom that use our films as primary sources. So it's really, you know, just an educational organization, and you get to be a part of this public history we're building whenever you let us digitize your films.
It's an amazing service to the community and the whole state. This current exhibition that just went up a few months ago, Amateur Auteurs, I guess we should, I think everybody knows what the word amateur means, but not everyone may know what auteur. It's a French word coming from the 1940s when the French coined this suggestion that certain directors are authors of their films, put their personal stamp on it. I guess there's nothing more personal than these homemade amateur films where the director, in quotes, probably wrote, starred, edited, did everything in the film. So how did this online exhibition come to form in your mind?
Well, we wanted to showcase some of the more creative works that are made in Texas homes. When people talk about amateur film, what typically comes to mind are home movies, just, you know, the typical point-and-shoot films that were made when small-gauge cameras came about for consumers. And, you know, that is usually what was made. But at the same time, creative people were able to get their hands on this new media, and some great ingenuity showed its face. Some people took the new technology of film and began producing creative works at home, and that's what we want to show off in this exhibit, the amateur cinema. And the filmmakers we included, with only one noteworthy exception, have entire bodies of work. They made many films with many different techniques, so this is why we named them our amateur auteurs.
And you've selected a couple to talk about. I want to start with a really amazing work from 1964, Ramon Galindo, who I gather lived or lives in Austin.
He still lives here in Austin. He's 92 years old.
Wow.
We actually went and talked to him before the exhibit. We've talked to him many times. We have a longstanding relationship with Mr. Galindo. But for this exhibit, we went over and interviewed him. You can actually hear him talk about making this film we're about to discuss, A Day of Horror. In the exhibit, we recorded him and let him tell his story some. So he's 92 years old, like I said, and he describes himself as a lifelong camera bug. He bought his first home movie camera and 8mm Brownie when he was a child in the 1920s.
Wow. So he's been making movies for most of the last century.
Yeah, definitely 70 years, I guess.
A longer career than most Hollywood directors.
And Mr. Galindo wears many hats. He's a tailor. He actually has a lot of really beautiful instructional films on tailoring that are in his collection. He has a shop here still. Well, he sold it now. It was Ace Tailors, but it's kind of a stalwart of Austin. Everyone knows Ace Tailors. But he's also a magician. This is his true passion. And he performs still magic tricks, but he was a big part of the Texas Association of Magicians, and he won many awards. So he started using film to record himself doing his magic tricks. Then he could improve upon them by filming them.
I was a bit surprised. You know, I've seen a lot of amateur films over the years, and frankly, some are difficult to watch. A Day of Horror, it's 13 minutes long. It was made in 1964, as we mentioned. It's in black and white. It's a horror film. I thought it was extraordinarily effective in its storytelling.
It's great, right? And he just used kids from his neighborhood. Both of his daughters are in the film. And the monster in the film was a coworker at the tailor shop who had become really popular with the customers at Ace Tailors because he would do a lot of scary faces whenever they came in. And so one day Mr. Galindo was like, you know, I want to make a movie with you doing your scary face. And Chris Crow was like, write it. We'll make it. And so they did, and this was the result. His special effects, I think, are really good in this horror film, which I think is a product of him being a magician and creating effects. And it also was really interesting because the film was shot on some property of a Hays County judge out between Kyle and San Marcos. And Ramon told us that he was just driving by and saw the property with kind of a rundown barn. And he was like, oh, that's the perfect place for us to make this film. And so he found out who owned it, contacted the judge, and called him and said, can we film on your property? And the judge said, yes, but you may not burn a fire. It will start a wildfire in this barn. So that was his only condition. So it's got a great story as well.
And a really nice, he has a nice sense of composition in it. There's a real sense of menace. It's an old abandoned house story with some kids going off to fish, I guess, in a wooded lake, and things go awry there. But I certainly recommend it to listeners to go check out A Day of Horror as part of your amateur auteur collection. Something very different, you picked out Bob Fry's Too Frightening from the 1970s. I guess it's a comedy and a fairly lengthy one.
Yes. We have it in two parts because it came to the archive on two reels. We put the two reels together for the exhibit, but as it exists in the archive as two original objects, it is two reels. It's about 38 minutes long, I think. There are two brothers, Robert and Alan Fry, Bob and Alan Fry, and Bob made this when he was in high school in Dallas, and he and his friends were inspired by the Marx Brothers and Woody Allen, he said, to make this slapstick comedy. They planned the entire thing by creating little thumbnail sketches in a notebook in art class, and they would carry the notebook around and work on it every day, which is probably how it got to be so lengthy. But they just used their family and friends as extras, and one of the friends made a soundtrack on a cassette tape, and they would just press play on the cassette whenever they
to synchronize the sound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How funny.
And that original soundtrack has actually been lost, but when we contacted Bob Fry to tell him we were featuring the film in the exhibit, he got a hold of Austin Jernigan, his friend that made the soundtrack, and he's working on a new one since the original was lost so that we can recreate it in the archive.
This is a bunch of teenagers playing a lot of different roles, but I guess you would sum it up by saying it's a little man trying to get ahead and being distracted along the way.
He is constantly thwarted. His mom tells him to go out and find a job, and the process becomes pretty challenging for him. He immediately gets taken hostage by bank robbers. He gets locked in a phone booth at a car wash while there's a dance party taking place outside the phone booth. He forms a one-man band, and then people steal his instruments. He tries to sell the Newsweekly Grit, but he's forced to eat the copies of Grit by a gang of hipsters. At the end, he unwittingly gets elected president, but then the media pressure just gets to be too much, so he quits the presidency and returns home to eat dinner with his mom.
Do you think that these filmmakers in the collection, were they doing this just out of, you know, the creative spark of wanting to make something personal for themselves and their friends, or did they actually have aspirations beyond the amateur film? Did they think at some point they'd be in commercial work?
I think it's kind of a mix. I believe that, you know, someone like Ramon Galindo, you know, he even says that in his interview. He just wanted to do it for the hell of it and go out and have fun. That's what he told mm-hmm. everyone that was taking part in it. But like Bob and Alan Fry, they both moved to Austin to go to school. They went to the Radio Television Film School at the University of Texas. So they all took film classes. And then collectively with some friends, they all moved into a house that they named TV Ranch, where they made a lot of artistic, creative works. But with them, I don't think they were trying to really make commercial productions so much as create art, which I think they succeeded in doing in their lives later on.
Your last selection is a filmmaker who was using film and technology for very different purposes than the first two. Is it Ouida Dean? Is that how
Ouida Dean, yes. And she actually represents something that you see pretty regularly when you study amateur film, documentary filmmaking, or films inspired by local happenings were really common in amateur filmmakers who lived in rural areas, which Mrs. Dean certainly does. She lives now in Nacogdoches, but these films were made when she was in Deep East Texas, outside of Nacogdoches, in a town called Timpson, which is in Shelby County. A lot of amateur filmmakers also considered themselves to be citizens with responsibility. They weren't apolitical, and Ouida Dean definitely took that responsibility seriously. All of her films either document problems or progress that she was seeing in her rural East Texas community.
So she was firmly in the documentary camp, and I believe a high school teacher, she was using these short films to instruct from?
Exactly. She took a seminar, a filmmaking seminar at the Rice Media Center, and then she took it back to her school in Timpson and launched an artist in schools program. So she had her own camera, and then the school had a camera, and she would work with her students to shoot films. They would come up with a concept and, you know, sketch out storyboards and shoot it.
One great example is titled Women in Agriculture, that you really get a sense of not only the time that it was made, 1976, but her own seeking out counteracting stereotypes of the time. She's interviewing girls and women about their lives and the options they have for their lives, and particularly within the agricultural and vocational training areas. It's really fascinating for the time period to see that.
Absolutely, and it's very effective. It was the first year that female students were allowed to take ag at Timpson High School, and there was apparently a lot of pushback and reaction from people. So Ouida Dean and her students went around, and, you know, she interviewed her students about how they felt about taking ag, and they talk about, you know, people questioning why they would want to do it and calling them tomboys. And then they go around to three different women actively working in agriculture in Shelby County and talk to them about, you know, how they would feel if they had had agricultural training. And these women are just great. There's this one woman who is plucking chickens and hanging them out to bleed. She talks about how she has 13 children, and being able to work with her chickens at home, you know, allows her to also take care of the household and of their children while they're making money on their poultry. And it's just very, very effective.
I should mention that there are some El Paso short films in the collection. There's some work from Chris Cummings Sr., some really great goofing around, some experimental test footage, if you will, with some slow motion, fast motion, double exposures and things, which show some of El Paso, so people can check that out. And you have some outtakes from Manos, The Hands of Fate, so El Paso is well represented in there. I want to thank you, Madeline, as always, for chatting with us and all that you all do to preserve these images of our culture and our past.
You're welcome. I'm so happy to do it.
I've been discussing the Texas Archive of the Moving Images' recent online exhibition titled Amateur Auteurs with the Archive's Managing Director, Madeline Moya. To see the exhibition and browse the Archive's substantial holdings of moving images, log on to texasarchive.org. For more of my conversation with Madeline Moya, log on to ktep.org. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.